roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goat. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Let's get it on.
What is going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Monday, ready to talk mixed martial arts with you for the next hour. We got a fun show ahead where we're basically going to cover UFC 265, the pay-per-view that just took place this past Saturday in Houston, Texas. In the main event, Ciryl Gane defeated Derek Lewis to become the UFC's interim heavyweight champ. So at some point, I'm sure he'll have to unify with the undisputed champion, Francis Ngannou. So we're going to cover that card. We're going to cover that fight, especially along with everything else that took place. Big fight in the bantamweight division with Jose Aldo defeating Pedro Munhoz. Big fight in the welterweight division with Vicente Luque defeating Michael Chiesa, and so on. 14 fights to go over, plus lots of news, folks. So buckle up. We're with you for the next hour here. Always noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. So if you're watching now, it's live. And here we go. How does it feel? We have a new UFC interim heavyweight champ. And look, all respect to Ciryl Gane. I think he's probably like, what do you want from me? Because he beats Alexander Volkov in June, and then they go, you want to fight in August? And he's probably thinking, the following August? I mean, in 2 months? Literally less than 2 months? You want me to fight for the interim title? Fran just won it? I mean, he's probably just as confused. But you can't fault him for saying, yeah, sure, you know, I'll fight him. You're going to put a strap on me if I win? You know, and sure, he's got to go to Lewis's hometown. That's not easy. But you can't blame Ciryl Gane. And he went out there, goes, and had a masterful performance on Saturday night over a tough, tough customer. He made Lewis look average at times. Lewis never got going. Lewis can do that sometimes when he's just slow and getting ready and cock his right hand, and then he lands it. And you're like, holy cow, that's the baddest man on the planet, or one of them. But he just never got to that point. Ciryl Gane just basically piece by piece dismantled him.
Dude, it was a great performance for Ciryl Gane. And like you said, you can't fault him for any of this. He has nothing to do with any of this. To be fair, though, to this day, I still don't think we've had a good explanation as to why this was even necessary. But we're here. And at the end of the day, we have the two best heavyweights, I think, right now are going to end up fighting each other. And I would say before this fight, Francis Ngannou, you put your money on him all day. But Ciryl Gane has just got this type of style, dude, that can really, really mess with people. I think it's like a little bit of a – it's more of an aggressive Lyoto Machida back in the day, I feel like. He's been doing that to other heavyweights. And I felt so bad for Derek Lewis because you could see the frustration on him. He just could not close the distance. And every strike – he would come up short, and then Gane would just take advantage of him. It really sucked for him. I felt really bad, especially in the hometown and all that. But now we got ourselves a big heavyweight matchup, and that's what we all want, right?
We do. I'll take it. You know, I'll take Jones and Ngannou as well. I'm not going to lie. Jones and Ngannou in that stadium here in Vegas would be epic. At some point, I'm ready for Ngannou versus Miocic Part 3. I mean, they are 1-1. We got to be fair. Had Lewis beaten Gane, he had every right to claim, you know, another title shot because he also owns a win over Francis Ngannou. So there was lots of options there for the UFC in the heavyweight division. They had a title fight. When they made this title fight, that title fight featuring Amanda Nunes and Juliana Pena fell off. So in the end, they did have, luckily for them, a pay-per-view headlined by a title fight, but it could have just been a five-round fight with huge repercussions for the loser and huge benefits for the winner. But, you know, they could have gone five rounds. It could have just been that. I don't think we needed to put a strap on Gon. When you have a clear-cut winner, a clear-cut, undisputed champion, it's still fresh in my memory. This just happened in March. We're in August. Of Francis Ngannou defeating the greatest heavyweight of all time in Stipe Miocic, avenging that loss, then flying to Cameroon, getting a hero's welcome, coming back. He lives in effing Vegas, for crying out loud. Like, this could have been sorted out some other way. This could have been an Ngannou title defense. If you listen to the interview with Ngannou on Unlocking the Cage with Jimmy Smith on SiriusXM, which we recapped on MMA Junkie, if you go back and look, he mentions that they wanted him to fight in June, but he said, no, but I'll be ready in July and August. I just got back from Cameroon. I just won the title in March. Like, slow down a little, you know? Mm-hmm. And especially when he had to wait for so long. So this could have been a title fight in Houston. It didn't have to be gone. I guess it could have even been Lewis, just fresh Derek Lewis versus Francis Ngannou. But I got a feeling that we're not being told everything, and I got a feeling that aside from the calendar not matching up, I think it's coming down to this with a lot of
people,
you know. And so it's not tying in, and Dana White has made it clear. If you want to fight, holler at me. If not, we're moving on, and we're just going to continue to make fights. And that's cool. Of course, the other side of me is like, well, are you being slightly unreasonable, or are they asking for too much? And also, is this taking away from the fact that the best fighters fight the best fighters? You make the fights the fans want, because I don't think we got that. You know, I mean, of course, who doesn't want Gon and Lewis? But I wanted Ngannou versus somebody, is my point.
All right, I'm going to ask you a question. Hear me out, okay? Put yourself in John Jones's shoes. He's at home watching this fight. Who do you think he believes he has a better chance of beating, Francis Ngannou or Ciryl Gane? I'm actually going to say that I think Ciryl Gane is the tougher opponent for John Jones. Am I right or am I wrong?
That is a good question, and that's a lot to unpack. Hold on. I'm computing. All right. So with Francis Ngannou, he's got the devastating power. And, of course, Gon has as well. But to me, it seems like Ngannou is throwing those fists at your head and looking to put you out immediately. Gon's looking to dismantle you. And he's got a lot of tools, man. Elbows, those kicks to Derek Lewis's legs. You know, the punches, which I love his punches. I just wouldn't fear his fists as much as Ngannou's at this point. And he just looks so calm out there, you know. So I think I would rather face Francis Ngannou and see if I can avoid his fists, maybe get him to the ground, which doesn't look to be as easy as when Stipe Miocic did it in 2018, and maybe getting him in the later rounds, which doesn't look like it's going to hurt Francis Ngannou like it did in 2018, and just maybe there, because, yeah, you're right. And Gon just seems more like a patient fighter, which is exactly what John Jones is. So it's just a bigger version of John Jones. Bigger and younger. Bigger, faster. No. Well, heck, John Jones isn't that fast. I mean, he's got some really, really nice kicks, but he's just long and devastating. So, yeah, I would say I would rather fight Ngannou than Gon. But I'd rather get hit by Gon than Ngannou.
All day, yeah. But how crazy is that? Like, really, when you think about it, if you're John Jones, you're thinking, all right, let me get my hands on Francis Ngannou. I'm going to hope he makes a mistake. I'm going to catch him. I'm going to try and get him down on the ground and see if I can exploit that. But with Ciryl Gane, like, I don't even know that John Jones will be able to get into his distance and be able to do anything. I think he's going to come up short on that one. I really, really do. And you have to remember one thing. If this fight comes to fruition, it's because Ciryl Gane has now become the heavyweight champion. And John Jones, for the most part, most of his career, has had the luxury of fighting a fight as a champion and kind of forcing. I know it's that unwritten rule that some people hate, that you got to take the belt from the champ. It forces you to come after him. And the few times where he hasn't had that, I think it bothers him to fight that way. I think it's going to be different. So I can't picture a John Jones feeling like he has to come and get something from a Cyril Gane. Like, that just seems like a gigantic trap. And I honestly don't think he can beat Cyril Gane.
Which is, by the way, what I kind of thought during the Aldo fight. In fact, I think you said it out loud. Aldo's almost fighting like he still has the title and Munoz has to take it from him. But then he would ramp it up later in the rounds and he got himself a nice win. I'm not ready to pivot to that fight just yet. Let's talk a little bit more about this heavyweight division. If Ngannou and Gane does not take place, I got to imagine it's because the UFC has dollar signs in their eyeballs and something happens and now Jones comes to play and they make Ngannou versus Jones. And I'm pretty sure maybe even Cyril Gane would go ahead, you know what I mean, and allow this to happen. I don't see Stipe Miocic as somebody that can get in the way of Ngannou versus Gane. Sorry, Stipe. Again, I started by saying you're the greatest heavyweight of all time. Your accolades prove it. But he's just off to the side. He's not out in the cold. He's off to the side. He'll be basically the bronze medal match. Whatever happens with Ngannou, if it's Ngannou versus Gane, then little rumors of Jones versus Miocic might pop up again. And if it's Ngannou versus Jones, then maybe if Gane wants to stay busy, which why would he? He just fought twice in 2 months. Then maybe he may not be as interested in Miocic. You know, Miocic may just have to start looking a little bit deeper into the rankings and seeing if there's somebody else. But It really is fun when a division has these types of options in their heavyweight division. It was when a promotion has these types of options in the heavyweight division. So right now, the UFC's heavyweight division is as popping as I've ever seen it.
Yeah, no, it's been pretty legit. And really, when you think about it, like, even we talk about like that fearsome foursome, but really, even when you start dropping down a little bit, like, there's some guys that look like they can be making some waves pretty soon. It's going to be a fun division for a while. But the one guy that I feel the worst for is Stipe Miocic, just because of everything he's accomplished. Really, when you think about it, a rematch should have maybe been somewhat of a slam dunk. But because of the way the landscape of the UFC at the time, it sort of wasn't. And now with John Jones throwing his name in the hat, he's just made it that much worse for Stipe. Like, Stipe's going to have to take a fight. He's going to be sitting around way too long. He's going to have to take somebody.
And guess what? A few of the guys are tied up. Volkov has Tabora. Tabora's been streaking. Volkov's just known as a top 10 guy, even though he's taken some tough losses. Blades has Jarzinho. So those guys are tied up as well. Now, those fights are coming up here in October and September. I said them backwards, but those four are going to be dancing here in the next within the next 2 months. So maybe that might produce something that interests Stipe Miocic. But I'll tell you this much, goes, could the UFC be looking back and saying, damn, should we have kept Dos Santos and Overeem just to kind of keep some places warm? They're big names. You can throw them to headline a fight night. Those guys get paid. The business transaction works for both parties. I mean, both would admit, yeah, we get it. We're not at the top of title talk. Although Overeem, I think, had a streak before that loss. So maybe he might actually take more offense to that. But JDS has had, you know, a few losses in a row. But keeping those names around, I mean, Sakai, I love him, but he had his shot, came up short. Ivanov, Blagoy, Ivanov hasn't fought frequently. So I don't know what's coming up in the world, I guess, that can maybe keep these guys busy. Because some of these guys, I wouldn't call them snobs, but Miocic isn't just going to tie up with, you know, one of the younger cats either. I mean, he's if you don't give him Ngannou, he's got to have a big name.
Yeah, I don't think the UFC thinks that, because even if they did hold on to those two guys, really, like you said, I know it's an ugly thing to say, but they're probably doing it hoping to put somebody else over. So let's just say it goes to plan and whoever you're putting over smashes one of those two guys. Like, those guys don't have that much of a life left as far as getting smashed. You know what I mean? Like, they can't be taking that many KOs or brutal fights.
JDS and Overeem, you mean?
Yeah. So, like,
they're probably in the same age bracket or wear and tear bracket as Arlovsky and Rothwell, and they've stuck around.
Dude, Overeem has probably been KO'd at least 10 times, but probably even more, right? And some of them have just been horrible. So I don't know that you want that on your hands. And then JDS, I'm not as many, but I don't know. Like, I don't think you could hold on to him for that long. And you'd be paying him a lot of money. So if I had to guess, I think they're okay with that. I'm shocked that one of them didn't go bare knuckle, though. I thought for sure that was going to be one of their signings.
Yeah, we'll see. All right. Well, congratulations to Cyril Gane. He's handled himself as a pretty classy and professional prize fighter. And it sounds like him versus Ngannou is inevitable. Again, the only thing I see where that doesn't happen is if John Jones were to declare himself ready sooner than he thought possible, which I think he already said, I don't see myself fighting until 2022. That's unfortunate because the last time we saw him fight was February of 2020, I believe. So that would put him at the two-year mark. Come on. He's going to commit the same mistake that Diaz brothers did, and that's that early 30s to mid-30s range where you're still in some sort of a prime. You may not have been able to do what you could physically, but when you could do that physically, mentally you were a space cadet, doing dumb stuff outside of the fight scene or just maybe not keeping it together. Although that's hard to say about John Jones in the octagon because I think that guy's had pretty amazing fight IQ throughout. He's found ways to win even when he was down in fights. So you can't take that away from him.
Will he ever fight at light heavyweight ever again? Do you think?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
I don't think so, man. I think he's done there.
Do you think he's going to pull an Overeem?
I think he's going to get – well, yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I think he's going to lose his first fight at heavyweight, but I think he's going to stay. And then, I don't think he's going to do it. I don't think he'll go back to light heavyweight.
I mean, DC did it, and that's a big boy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure – it's not like I've seen a picture of him. I'm sure he's going to be bigger, more jacked, but he doesn't need to come in at like Overeem did, 265, super jacked. I think he just needs to come in there and put some weight on. I think like when I saw OSP fight Rothwell, he was more like 245-ish. They're about the same height, 6'3", 6'4". Something like that, perhaps. I don't know. Let's talk about the co-main event. Jose Aldo defeated Pedro Munhoz. He blanked him on all the judges' scorecards. Boy, at times that guy, when he unloads and he just throws multiple punch combos or even just the one and two or even those leg kicks that he finally got going towards the end of the fight, he really looks like championship material again. Now, that said, I remember clearly him going against Peter Yan and coming up short. Peter Yan's not the champion, but he was at the time. So I don't know if I'm ready to anoint him there, but still, you get past Pedro Munhoz, that tells you something. That along with now he's had a few weight cuts to 135 pounds. Maybe he's getting more comfortable in that walk-around weight and that fighting weight. I don't know. But he hasn't lost much on the speed department. I'm glad he brought the kicks back. And he's actually taking a few shots pretty well to the chin.
That fight was I was very happy and very frustrated at the same time. Happy because it feels like that Jose Aldo of old was somewhat back, especially in round three. But frustrated because now for sure we can tell he knows that he's holding back. He's holding back on purpose. And in this particular fight, yeah, it might have helped him. And he had a very dominant round three and he won that fight. But in other fights, holding back is what's held him back from winning. And so, there was a little point where I think people were thinking, all right, well, he's hurt his foot so much. Maybe he's afraid to throw these kicks. But in round three, he had no problem throwing them. So that is just such a major weapon. I feel like every Jose Aldo fight, one of the first strikes he's got to throw is that. Just because it scares the shit out of people. And I don't know that he knows that or remembers it. But I'm glad that in round three we saw that Jose Aldo. And the one thing that they say when you get older, it starts to go away is your speed. And dude, he looked just as fast as he ever has. He seemed like he had some pretty good power.
Huh? How about his reaction time? Because I thought Munhoz was actually going to tatter his legs. And every time Munhoz kicked, he was already ready to turn and check it or just lift his leg and have him miss it or maybe just take a swipe at it. Instead of connecting shin on flesh. And so that reaction time's there. He still keeps his hands up, and he's patient. He really has – the only thing he lacks is that bravado of being a young 20-year-old and not giving an F, you know what I mean? And running up to someone and throwing a flying knee. You're more reckless when you're younger, you know, and you tend to take a few more of those risks. But that, and I guess, you know, I've also seen him slow down in the cardio department. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's the fight where I also came to grips and said, whoa, Peter Yan, I underestimated him. I knew he was good. I knew he was championship material. I just didn't think he could actually be a world champion and you know, kind of leave that little trail of devastation, you know, because he was very impressive against Aljo, too, before that foul. So, you know, that all I'm thinking is if he gets back to Aldo or Yan, can he beat them? And I'm not so sure he can, but we'll see. He did his job. He beat Pedro Munhoz. He's now 2-2 since dropping the bantamweight. He took an early loss to a split decision loss to Marlon Moraes. Then he lost to Peter Yan. And then he beat Marlon Vera, and now he beat Pedro Munhoz. So he's 2-2. We'll see what happens. But, boy, when he makes the walk, if you just look at Twitter, everyone's in awe. I mean, he's a legend, man. This is Jose Aldo, for crying out loud, former WEC stud champ and still fighting in the UFC many years later. Very revered in Brazil. I don't know that anyone will ever reach the status of Anderson Silva, but I know Nogueira's pretty well-loved. Beloved, I should say, you know, because reality show, being an ambassador for the UFC, all those gyms that he has, same probably for Wanderlei Silva. You know, he's a legend, obviously, through Pride and UFC, and he's got gyms. He's also done the reality show. But Jose Aldo, that movie, once that movie came out, I noticed he's really, really popped. And for Pedro Munhoz, he'll just have to get back to the drawing board, a la, you know, like the Jimmy Riveras and Asansals, guys that have gotten close to the top, but they just come up short in key fights. This was a key fight for Pedro Munhoz. This loss is going to sting. It's one of those where if you're in a division like the bantamweight division that's deep and you take a loss like that, this thing could set them back 18 months at best, maybe up to 2.5 years in terms of getting a streak going and then putting yourself in a position to fight and be the number one contender or fight for the title. You know, there's just so many killers. There's tons of killers that are in the way. Dominic Cruz, he just kind of did that to Sanhagen, except Sanhagen's younger, and Sanhagen already has some impressive skins on his wall that I think he can bounce back a little bit faster than Pedro Munhoz. So I love this division. I absolutely love this division.
How about TJ Dillashaw? That's a name that's been kind of thrown out there for Jose Aldo next. How do you like that one?
All right. So it looks like Sterling and Yan are going to fight in late October in Abu Dhabi. If they don't fight there, they're going to fight in Vegas because Sterling's been pretty open about the fact that he doesn't think he's going to get cleared in New York, not because of COVID, but because they just go through a lot more extensive medicals. So there's an issue there. But whether he fights in late October, or early December, that's about a six-week range. Aldo and Dillashaw both lead you to believe that they want to get in there sooner rather than later. I mean, but it is the first week in August. So I don't want neither one of these guys to serve as the, you know how I feel about that independent insurance guy that just sits it out. What I would take is Dillashaw versus Aldo on the same card as Yan versus Sterling. But I'll be clear about this. I feel like the insurance in this case would be if Yan falls out, I think you have to give it to Dillashaw. He would be kind of like your one. Aldo would be your 1A. So if Sterling can't go, then it gets more complicated because Peter Yan might say, well, I don't want Dillashaw. I mean, unless they make it for an interim, but I don't know how he'll feel about that. It all depends on why Sterling is out. You know, did he get COVID and they can regroup in January or soon after? Yan might go, I'll just wait. I'll hang back. And then you still have Dillashaw versus Aldo. Not for the main event, but you still have it somewhere on the card. So you see what I'm saying, where it can kind of serve many purposes. Yeah. In this case, usually what happens is the fights happen. Usually these little somebody bumped their toe or somebody slipped on the back. That's rare. Those are stories that you hear from time to time, but it's not like they're that often. So most of the time the fights will just take place. And what will happen is you'll have Sterling versus Jan, where he is now, if he beats Jan, then Jan I don't see getting a title shot right away in any way, because he's going to have to win a couple, because now he'll be 0-2 technically against Jan, Sterling. Though, really, some might still file it as 1-1 in their heads because of how the first fight was going. But what I'm saying is, there's just going to be other fighters that are going to line up to fight Sterling before Jan can get that third fight. If Jan wins, now you got a clear 1-1 on the books. And, you know, Sterling won't have much of a title reign because that this is going to be his first title defense. So I don't know that he can just walk into the part three either. And that's where you have Dillashaw, who's leading the way, ready to, if he beats Aldo, say, I'm next. Proclaim that he's next on that same card. It works magically. The worst case scenario is probably if Aldo beats Dillashaw and Jan beats Sterling, then I think the UFC is going to go, he just beat you. You know, like, we can't run that one back so quickly. We can't run back Jan versus Aldo, I don't think, so quickly. Again, I love Jose Aldo, but can you really sell that one again that you may need Aldo to have one more, I guess. Now, who else could claim something? I don't know. I mean, Sterling would have to come up with some sort of a compelling case for the trilogy, or Dominic Cruz might have to say, hey, look, I don't have many left. Let me get that one last shot for the title. Cody Garbrandt dipped to 125. We'll talk about that in a minute. Sanhagen just took this loss. Munoz just took this loss. Edgar hasn't come back. I don't know. So as deep as
get your
certain matchups that can make.
Yeah, you still have your Fonts of the world.
Oh, yeah. What am I thinking? Rob Font, of course. Rob Font doesn't have a problem with what I'm saying this whole time. He should be saying, I want to be on the same card as Aldo and Jan and Sterling. And remember, last week I said it could be that these fighters may tap me on the shoulder and say, shh, we love being the substitutes. We know we're probably not going to fight. We get paid. We negotiate a handsome fee. All I got to do is make weight, and then I get ready for my real title fight. You're going to ruin it for us. Shut up. It could be that happens one day. I don't know. But I don't know that too many fighters like that. I really don't. Glover Teixeira did it last year for Reyes and Blachowicz, and somebody else did it this year. You see that a lot, these fighters lining up like that. And I'm like, what's it, an RDA? RDA was insurance for something. He was insurance for Poirier and McGregor, right?
Yeah, he weighed in and everything.
Yeah, it wasn't a title fight, but whatever. All right, next up, Luque versus Edwards. Vicente Luque submitted Michael Chiesa. That's right, submitted. We all said if it goes to the ground, Chiesa's tougher there. If it stands, if they stand, Luque's deeper there. You know, of course, we all know they're all well-rounded, and Chiesa could possibly knock out Luque, and Luque could possibly knock out Chiesa. It's just not the first thing that people jump, you know. When somebody asks you this question, sometimes you have 30 seconds to answer it, and you got to give them the meat and potatoes, you know. And I don't think too many people saw this, especially early on like that. But credit to Vicente Luque, who he was getting actually, you know, his back was taken. And he, at first it looked like a jawbreaker, you know, like a crossface type of a choke. But because he wasn't really aligned with his body when he took it, Luque was off to the side. He was able to get out of that. But then when he grabbed the hold of his head, I thought, well, yes, it should be okay. I think that's what I thought mentally. I don't even know if I said it during our watch along. But next thing you know, man, it was tight. And it looked like Chiesa turned into a certain angle where he might be able to alleviate that pressure, man. But he couldn't. And Vicente Luque pulled it off. Congrats to him, man. That was a masterful win for him.
That was best case scenario for him, right? Because even if he would have – if just Michael Chiesa is so tough, you know, that's just a good win. Even if it went to decision, that's a good win. But for him to be able to go in there and submit him, he made a statement. And the one person in the world that I believe probably hated that statement was Leon Edwards, right? Because this sport, man, it's what have you done for me lately? That's what sucks. I mean, it sucks, but it also kind of makes sense at the same time. And Luque did that. He maximized his opportunity. Right time, right place. He's the man right now, and because he's the man right now, he's a name that's going to be thrown into that mix.
Leon Edwards is 19-3 overall. He's coming off that win over Nate Diaz, and He hasn't lost in his last 10 fights. The reason I say it that way is because of the no contest that we had against Bilal Muhammad. So that last Diaz fight, even though he won it, the lasting impression was Diaz almost knocking him out, I guess, in that final round. You know, he really, really hurt him, and then he went after him, but Edwards survived. Edwards had dominated the first four rounds. So you have that, and then you have Vicente Luque, who then goes out and weeks later does what he did to Michael Chiesa. Now he's 21-7-1, and he's won four in a row, and that's on the heels of submitting Tyron Woodley. So those are two big names, man, Chiesa and Woodley. And remember, he's had the last impression. That said, Edwards beat Luque as part of that streak. Luque also took another loss while Edwards was streaking, and that was to Stephen Thompson. That's why he's only got a four-fight win streak, because of the Stephen Thompson loss. So all credit to Luque. He is a hot hand. I'm telling you, he really is. But was it enough to overstep Edwards? I don't think so, man. That's 10 in a row that he hasn't lost, and one of them includes Luque. Oof, that is really, really tough. Luque has something going. Remember, beating Chiesa and Woodley, that pops big time. And doing it last and getting these finishes, I'm with you. I'm with you that this should be talked about and entertained. But in the end, when you're all sitting around the table and everybody's calmed down and pleaded their case, I think you should, you know, one goes. There's just more evidence that shows Leon Edwards is still in the pole position.
I agree. I think Dana White says those type of things because I think he believes that when you lay out all the facts, you're going to end up with Leon Edwards. But I think he says those things so that if Leon Edwards says, nah, I don't want to fight in New York, or I think I need more money, he might not want to do that because now he's heard these types of things, right? Correct. So I think as a promoter, I understand why he does that. But I think when the chips fall, I think he knows that this is the right guy.
That's the game. Exactly. Dana White has a promotion to protect. And so there's certain things that he's going to say along the way. And it's going to irk some fighters, and it's going to reinforce other fighters to feel good about their positions. So it's becoming more cutthroat. Prize fighting is becoming more cutthroat. Before it was like, whatever the UFC wants, that's 95%. And now I think a few of them are speaking more, you know, and saying, no, this is what I want, you know, and some of them are getting it. Some of them are taking the longer road to get it. Some of them get it in not so best of circumstances, like Masvidal. He got paid, man. Don't take that away from him. He got paid last year in Abu Dhabi, but he got the call 1 week before. And even though he told us he was in shape, was that the best case scenario to fly across the world while losing weight to fight a killer like Kamaru Usman? Probably not. But then they ran it back the second time. He took like his loss like a man, and that's that. You know, that one was only 6 weeks, by the way, but still, I think it's enough time. And, you know, I don't fault Dana for saying those things. I think some of them might be just because he wants the prop of his roster, too. I got killers everywhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not just because he's playing the politics game, but I think a lot of it is just giving good shine to deserving fighters. And Vicente Luque was definitely deserving for what he did on Saturday night.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's impressive, dude, really, with that. And now you got, seriously, like, okay, he's your opponent. Now you got to worry about this shit too when it hits the ground like that. Like, I mean, it was no fish out of water before this, but still, that's aggressive, dude, going after Michael Chiesa. Like, most people would just stand up, take advantage of you having that advantage on the feet. But he had the balls to go for the submission, and he locked it in, man. He caught him. And by the way, did you see what Chiesa wrote? His little, I mean, that was very cool. Man, that was very cool to read.
This is an understatement. You could tell that one hurt him, man. That loss hurt him.
It stung him, but that was probably one of the most mature things he could have done. And I think that's like, that's that early process. To me, that's impressive because that's the early process of a fighter moving past something and starting to get better because of it. I think he showed that. I was super impressed by what Michael Chiesa wrote.
His statement was brilliant. He said, I want to get ahead of this before anything else. That means he's communicating with his fans, and he's saying, look, I am embarrassed. I'm beyond embarrassed for what happened. He credited his opponent a few times, I think at least two times. And then he said, hey, fans, I love you all. I love this sport. I was prepared, but he got me, you know. And it was pretty brief. That's the way it should be. He tackled it head on. You got to respect that. You know, if you're on the Chiesa train, you shouldn't jump off. That was a tough loss, but that at the same time, I also felt it was a little soon when people were pushing for Chiesa versus Usman. I felt like, nah, you still got to get past a few of these guys to get there. Chiesa's got a big name. He's a former winner of The Ultimate Fighter. He's super popular. He's loved by fans. And then, of course, he's getting a lot of shine and doing very well as a broadcaster. But this is a stacked welterweight division where fighters have won many fights in a row or have incredible win streaks going. And so even though sometimes your name carries some weight in this division and bantamweight, oof, you got to just put them wins, you know, stack them up, and then you get looked at for a title shot. Mm-hmm. All right, here are some of the other results from Saturday night. Tisha Torres defeated Angela Hill. Song Yadong defeated Casey Kenny. Those are both decisions, and they were the first one, Torres, was unanimous. The Yadong and Kenny fight, that one was a split decision. I bet Casey Kenny, but I thought Song Yadong won that fight. I really wanted. I thought if Kenny won round three, and I thought he was going to because I thought Song Yadong was slowing down. So I thought he was really going to pull that out, but Kenny didn't pressure as much in round three. I think he wanted to steal round three at the end, and it backfired. Rafael Fiziev versus Bobby Green, brilliant fight. That got fight of the night. We'll go over all the bonuses in just a second. It was a unanimous decision. I thought 29-28 was appropriate. I didn't think 30-27 was a good call because I thought Green really, really outscored him in round three. The graph showed it and everything. So when I heard 30-27, I was like, wait a minute. Well, for sure, Bobby didn't lose round three. I thought the first two rounds were closer. I thought they were going to actually give it to Bobby Green, but he didn't get it, and that's that. I'd watch these guys fight once a month. They were really, really exciting. Vince Morales defeated Draco Rodriguez. Unanimous decision there. Alonzo Minifield defeated Ed Herman. Unanimous decision there. And Jessica Penne submitted Karolina Kowalkiewicz. First round submission, armbar. That was the four fights from the ESPN portion of the pay-per-view. And then on the early prelims, Manel Cape defeated Odey Osborne. That was a flying knee followed by some punches. Miles Johns defeated Anderson Dos Santos. KO one punch, got the job done. Melissa Gatto defeated Victoria Leonardo. TKO, doctor stoppage there. Johnny Munoz Jr. defeated Jamie Simmons, submission rear naked choke. That early prelims goes, they were flying. They had to make up for some fill-in time, which is good for the broadcasters because they do all their research, and that allows them to do that and for the production team to show off other aspects of a broadcast. But then we got some decisions in the ESPN portion. Three of the four were decisions. And on the pay-per-view, three of the five were decisions as well.
Yeah. Overall, though, I think it was just an okay card. It was fun at times. It had its moments. But the pacing, the main event didn't really do it for me. But I did want to thank everybody that joined us on our watch-along. That was a lot of fun. We were there for 5 hours, I think. But it was a good time. Like, that made it so much better. But I would probably give this card a B. How about you?
I'm with you as well. Fighters like Luque, what he did was just absolutely brilliant, honestly. And Aldo closing strong as well, making sure that if it was 1-1, he wasn't going to lose round three. So the early prelims definitely, you know, had some moments. Penne's submission win was brilliant over Karolina Kowalkiewicz. Let's not forget, both of those young ladies fought for the title against Joanna Jędrzejczyk. So they're championship caliber. It's just that Kowalkiewicz has now lost five straight, you know, and Penne lost time in her career due to that long-ass suspension from USADA. But now she's back in the win column. She's gotten a couple wins since then. So this was good. She also got a bonus. Let's go over the bonuses. Fiziev and Green, I gave it away, but they won fight of the night. No shocker there. But the UFC decided to go with six bonuses, goes. You got to give them props for that, because there's been times where I felt like somebody got frozen out just with the fifth bonus. You know, mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, can't you guys just Maybe give them 40 grand each to five instead of 50 to four? Or can you just give them another bonus? And because fighters have deserved it, man. There's been some fighters that have gotten frozen out, and I'm like, how the hell did you not get one? Yeah. However, in this instance, not only did they go five, they went six. Ciryl Gane got a performance of the night. I thought he deserved it, man. Think about how many fighters have fought Derek Lewis and not been able to do that. They're A, not laying stiff on the ground, or B, if they beat him, you know, they also took some shots along the way. And Ciryl Gane, man, he was pretty masterful. Vicente Luque definitely deserved it. Who submits Chiesa nowadays? Not too many. Jessica Penne, amazing comeback. She took down a title contender in the first round. Miles Johns, that works for me too. So six bonuses the UFC gave out. And look, reason I'm reemphasizing that is I thought I looked in the crowd and saw empty seats. Now, when I was saying it early on, you had a right to go, big dummy, you know how it fills up as the night progresses. But I could have sworn I saw them pan into the crowd, especially when the fighters are walking out. By the time Aldo and Dillashaw were fighting, or even Luque and Vicente, some of those seats should have been a little bit more filled. So I don't know that they were hanging from the rafters at the Toyota Center in Houston, Texas. They were last time they were there, but this time I'm not sure they were. So usually the UFC, I think, when they have those big stadium cards or just incredible pay-per-views, they're a lot more likely to share, you know, and you know, the profit that they make and write out a couple extra bonuses. So for them to do that on a card where I still saw a few empty seats, one that lost a pivotal pay, a co-main event in Amanda Nunes and Jessica Penne, I got to give them the props there.
Yeah, no, I agree. That the crowd was a little flat here and there, though. Like, for the Bobby Green Fiziev fight, they were loud and they were really into it. And maybe they were just going through some of the same stuff we were, the ups and downs a little bit. But I thought they could have been maybe a little louder during the Jose Aldo fight and the Luque fight. But, yeah, they kind of fell a little flat.
Yeah. Now, listen, I don't want to talk out of my ass. I wanted to look something up here. So this was the attendance figure for Saturday night. Saturday night had 16,604 for a gate of 3.4 million and change. The last time they were there, which was Oliveira and Chandler, they had 16,005. So they sold one more. Wait a minute. They sold more tickets this time? Oh, sorry. Yeah, they sold more tickets this time, but the gate then goes was over 4 million. So I guess Houston did come strong, and maybe people just at the last minute decided not to show. But you know what I'm talking about, those big pockets that were there. Those were the tickets sometimes that they would give away via Twitter, the UFC, because those were, I thought, priced a little high, like when you're not cage side within the first couple rows and you start to go up. Mm-hmm. I don't know that you can price some of those as much as the cage side ones.
Yeah.
I haven't been to an event in a minute, but still, I saw a lot of empties. Not just more than your typical, oh, he went to get a beer. Oh, they're getting a hot dog. Oh, they went to the restroom. You know, I get that Tisha Torres and Angela Hill slowed things down a bit, but you should have been in your seat for Chiesa and Luque and for sure Aldo and Dillashaw. And I still kept seeing some empties, but I just looked up the attendances. They were similar. The one in May had a bigger attendance, which means, I guess, hang on, they had less in May, but a bigger gate. So they charged more per ticket. The demand was higher.
There's a couple people I know that went to that card, so I think I'm gonna ask them, because really when it came down to the main event, it looked like every seat was taken, but there was large chunks of that pay-per-view where you just kept seeing these empty seats.
16,604 this past Saturday, 3.4 million was the gate, and yeah, a little bit of star power was lacking too, right? Did I miss it? I mean, I'm co-hosting this watch along with you, but I'm looking, and they showed a few fighters. They showed Brandon Moreno and Juliana Pena, but I didn't see like a big name, a lot of celebrities from other sports or entertainment. Did you see that?
Just Roger Clemens. I remember that. And then the
governor of Texas, right?
The governor. You know, man, they always throw these like little bastard or someone that you just don't really know, like. You get it. They're obviously probably popular, but you don't know like how popular, right?
Is Lil Bastard really a rapper nowadays, or did you just make that up?
I made it up, but I bet you there is a little bastard.
Little bastard. That'd be a great rap name. Yeah. All right. Look, the other fights, you're free to chime in on if you want. Again, big wins for Song Yadong, Tisha Torres, Rafael Fiziev. Any thoughts on those three?
I kind of had Bobby Green winning that fight. But it was a great fight. It definitely deserved fight of the night. And it's funny because the position that they were in, you still got to sweat out five more fights, right? Or it might have even been six. Six more fights. Five fights? Yeah. To get that bonus. But I think when the main event started, I think Bobby was probably already spending that money. He's probably on Amazon at that point.
What about Ed Herman's leg? Holy cow.
Oh.
Look like he had a shin pad on his shin.
I had joked around that, like, he, towards the end of that fight, was almost looking like Tony Soprano when he goes to get the newspaper. Like, he was just plotting. He looked pretty miserable out there, dude. I don't know.
40 years old, still out there, man. Tough as nails. He did not want the fight to stop.
What was it, 28 fights he's had or 27 fights, something like that? He's had a lot of fights in the UFC.
Believe this was number 27 for Ed Herman.
Yeah.
That's he was the Ultimate Fighter, and now he's 40 years old. So season three was probably be around, if I had to guess, 2006-ish, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, probably 15 years alone just in the UFC and then whatever fights he had before then.
Crazy. That's so hard to do. It really, really is hard to be able to do that for so long. You look at guys like Jim Miller and Joe Lozon that really, really made this not only a career, but at the highest level. That's amazing. Ed Herman's one of those guys.
Jessica Penne, two straight, 38 years of age. But since she's come back, remember, she sat out from April of 2017 to April of 2021. That's a four-year layoff. Now, a lot of it obviously had to do with what happened with USADA. She had a four-year suspension. She was able to negotiate or maybe appeal, and it got brought down. But either way, she did not fight for 4 years. But now she's come back with two wins, and on one of those, she produces a win bonus. So that's some good money to put in your pocket after not being able to make an income for 4 years.
Yeah, that's awesome. And not only that, you know, she looked pretty good. Karolina Kowalkiewicz, I just don't know what the hell's going on there, what's going to happen. But Jessica Penne went in there and did her job. And I'm still not sure what we have with Jessica Penne. I know she fell short one time already. But she can put together a couple fights and look the way she did in this fight. I don't see how she can be overlooked, but that's just maybe wishful thinking, I think, now at this point.
This week, the UFC's off. They come back on August 21st with Kelvin Gastelum versus Jared Cannonier. Some other big fights on that card include Chase Sherman. He's back. Vince Pichel versus Austin Hubbard. Brandon Royval versus Alexander Pantoja. Brian Kelleher. Clay Guida versus Mark Madsen. So they got some names there. Courtney Casey's back. Abdul Razak Al-Hassan is back. All right. This one will be at the Apex here in Las Vegas. This was going to be Cannonier versus Costa, but Cannonier is now facing Gastelum. I think Costa back then said, I would never sign the contract. But he signed another contract, and I'll tell you guys about it on the roundup that Nolan King did, one of our colleagues at MMA Junkie. Tackle that in just a second. But we do have Bellator and PFL on Friday at the same time. So PFL goes on ESPN2 at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, with their main card, which features lightweights and welterweights, in semifinals. The winners, whoever wins, is in the finals in October where they fight for $1 million. The headline bout there is Rory McDonald versus Ray Cooper III. Ray Cooper is the defending champion. He's the 2019 champion, of course, in 2020. PFL did not have a season. Rory McDonald, a former Bellator welterweight champion, former UFC title contender, and now he's at the PFL. So that's a big, big main event. But then Bellator goes, oh, yeah? Well, we got some names, too. They got Gegard Mousasi defending against John Salter. Gegard Mousasi is a former Strikeforce light heavyweight champion. He's defending his Bellator middleweight title. But let's not forget, he's also a Cage Warriors, former Cage Warriors champ, former champ at Dream. He had one other title, too, if I'm not mistaken, either World Victory Road. I can't remember what it was, but the big one, obviously, was the Strikeforce light heavyweight title that he won. And So now he's back at 185 against John Salter. John Salter's, I think, finished all but one of his fights. Gegard's finished 38 of his 47. So do not blink on that one. I don't think that one goes to the judge's decision. But they start at the same time. So, Goz, I got a question for you. Everyone's got two TVs, three TVs, five TVs, whatever. If you got seven, good for you. Everyone's got that, or the laptop and the TV. So everyone solved that dilemma. But my question is, which one would you have the volume up for if they start at the same time?
I think McDonald and Cooper, just because.
I think so too.
Nobody's. I don't know if there's any way that that goes to
distance. I love watching Musasi fight.
Those two guys are going to hit, like, they hit too hard, and they're too aggressive not to really connect. So somebody's got to go to sleep in that fight, dude. They got to.
Cooper puts on a pace for sure. He keeps you on the edge of your seat. Him and Michael Chandler remind me of each other because they're both wrestlers, but you can just tell they're hunting, man. They're stalking. It's the way they're just, you know, the way they stalk their prey. They're hunched over, but you can just tell they want to uncoil, like uncork a big right or left or whatever. And just go after your guy, you know. And they're willing to wrestle, but that's one thing I love about their style. That's one thing I love about Conor McGregor is when the fight starts, what's up? This is what we came for. Let's go, you know. Like, he even did it to Khabib. He lost to Khabib, but he even did it to Khabib. You know, usually against Khabib, when the referee tells you, start, fight, whatever, I think you probably do a little side shuffle, you know. Like, all right, which way is he going? I'm going this way. Because you know that guy wants to dive at your legs. But Conor actually walked out and said, what's up? You know, and then Khabib even took a step back. But that's one thing I enjoy about some of those fighters, that they just push forward and they're ready to get down. I don't know. Whether they win or lose, I still got to give them that. Cooper's going to make it exciting, and yeah. I love watching Gegard Mousasi fight. I've seen so many of his fights, Vitor, Dan, Mark Hunt, you know, even going back to the Pride days, the upkick against Jacare Souza. There's a lot of them. But I think you're right. I think Cooper and McDonald would be a little tougher. And I think it has to do with we're not as familiar with John Salter. Salter's won like three in a row, and I think he's got 18-3 record or 19-3 record, and all of them have been finishes. You can't say he doesn't come to fight, but the PFL has probably heightened Ray Cooper's name value more. And to be fair, he won a title versus Bellator hyping up John Salter's name. So maybe that's something to think about. You know, maybe if Bellator's listening, that's something to think about. How do we make sure that anybody that's fighting for a title definitely has built up their name? You know, Juliana Velasquez, I thought, was kind of quiet, undefeated and all, but when she went up against Aleem Alay, you know, I thought that should have been propped up a little bit more somehow, and it hadn't reached the casuals, the hardcores, like it should have.
You know, the other thing that Ray Cooper did, and it was in our last interview with him, he woke up a little bit, man. You know, he wasn't really like talking smack, but he was telling you why he wanted to win this fight, what it meant to him. Like, he was a little bit more open, and he got me fired up for it too. Usually I don't get that from Ray Cooper will tell you exactly what he's going to do, but he doesn't really say much. This time he opened up a little bit more, and it made me even more fired up for the fight.
Yeah. There's an interesting article with the promotional guidelines for compliance. So that's basically the money that the fighters get from Venom. I haven't peeked at one in a while, but Cyril Gane and Derek Lewis took home $32,000 each. So they were basically challengers, I guess, to a title fight, because usually the champion gets $40,000 and the other guy gets $30,000. But it looks like they're now paying $32,000 to that position. So a little bit more money that the UFC is trying to spread out from their money that they receive from Venom to the fighters. Doesn't sound like a lot, but I guess if it's going down to some of the other fighters, then good for them. Bobby Green, to his credit, $21,000. I think he's probably where he used to get $20,000. Jose Aldo got $21,000. Ed Herman got $21,000. So I think that's once you reach your 20th fight. But there's an article on that on MMA Junkie if you want to check it out. I thought it was pretty interesting. And then lastly, the roundup. Nolan King's roundup is a very, very good piece that goes up on MMA Junkie, usually weekly. But here are the latest fights that were booked. I'll get goes to react to them. throughout the week that you just may not have missed because there's so much going on, man. The Olympics. Oh, man. Did you see the Americans with those last-minute comebacks? David Taylor from Penn State, he won last minute. But the one that was crazy – oh, and shout-out to Tamara Mensah. First black female in the entire planet to win a gold medal. So not just the first black American woman, but first black female on the entire planet to win an Olympic gold medal in wrestling. And then the United States got 9 medals total. I know 3 of them were gold, but the one that was really, really last minute goes was Gable Stevenson. So he's this big cat, big heavyweight out of Minnesota, a Brock Lesnar training partner. He was up 5-2 and then down 8-5 with seconds to go, and then he was able to get I think actually when they looked at the tape, because it was a controversial appeal from the other fighter, I think it was from Georgia, I think he was finally able to get either a 10-8 win or a 9-8 win, but literally in the last second, the crowd was going nuts. The small crowd that was there, but the USA wrestling contingent that was there, but that was a big, big win. He's only 21 years of age, but that's amazing, you know, to win that late in the Olympics. Mm-hmm.
I think we did overall medal count. I think we did pretty good. But gold medals, I think we only edged China by 1, right?
Yeah. So they were losing. They were losing to China the whole way through. Overall medals, they were up by 20 or something like that. Mm-hmm. But they were losing the gold medal count. But on the last day, shout out to the men's 4x400 and, you know, probably Stevenson and everybody else that was able to get themselves a win. Allison Felix, by the way, got her 11th track and field gold medal, the most ever, men or women, for the United States, maybe even of all the sprinters of all the countries. But she got a gold medal in the 4x400. So she's competed at 200, 100, 400, and all the relays, and very, very decorated. I'm jumping around everywhere here. But so, yeah, the United States got 1 more gold medal than China. So if you're looking at just gold medals, the United States won that by 1, I think 39-38. And then overall medals, the United States had like almost 115. I think China was in the 90s. I think third may have been Japan or Russia, the Russian Olympic Committee. Mm-hmm. You know, they – When they would win, they wouldn't play the national anthem. They would play, I think, a piece by Tchaikovsky, one of their well-known composers, you know?
Yeah.
He's like, you know, this guy's highly thought of, like a Mozart or whatever. So they would play that. And, hell, that might have even been more beautiful to listen to than the Russian national anthem. Mm-hmm. But they didn't really change much. The colors, you know, the colors were surprised because you're not really – you're not supposed to get the anthem or I think the colors, but the colors were still red, white, and blue, you know, kind of like how they do it on their flag. So not much really changed there. That's another subject. You know, I want them there. The Russians are great athletes, so I want them there. But Japan overall had 5 gold medals in wrestling. Russia had 4. United States had 3. So shout out to United States wrestling because 9 medals overall is nice. We interviewed Kayla Harrison last week, and she was saying, I want judo to do what they've done in USA wrestling. You know, they got to revamp the system and the accountability from top to bottom so that we can have more judokas. I mean, to be fair, look, wrestling, like she said, is in our school system. Judo isn't, but she thinks it can maybe get there one day. Right now, judo is just totally ran by the Japanese and the French and the Germans. They're really, really good at it. All right. So the roundup. Let me do the roundup here. All right, Goes. We have – let me see here. The big ones, because we're almost out of time. Let me skip to some of the big ones that were made. Well, he includes a lot of them in here. All right. Oh, Paulo Costa versus Marvin Vettori. That's a matchup. October 23rd. It's a UFC fight night, and it's going to be 1 week before the UFC goes to Abu Dhabi, which I believe is not going to be a pay-per-view now. I think it's just going to be like a fight night maybe on ABC or ESPN. We'll see. But I think this is going to be at the UFC Apex, so that's a big fight. And then Dos Anjos versus Makhachev, that's big. That's in Abu Dhabi. If it is, a pay-per-view, it'll be called UFC 267. But I think it could be called UFC 267 and still not be a pay-per-view. We'll see. We'll clear that up soon. Marcin Tybura versus Alexander Volkov on that same night. That's pretty good, right? Tabora's all the way back, and now he's a player at heavyweight. And then we have November 6th in New York, Rockhold versus Sean Strickland. These guys have been going at it on social media. You like that one?
I like that one, but right now in the lead is Vettori and Costa.
Yeah. Philippe Lenz versus Ovince St. Preux. That's in November. Joanne Calderwood against Alexa Grasso, also in November, right before Thanksgiving. I like that one. And lastly, how about this one? Kai Kara France against Cody Garbrandt. It's a UFC fight night on December 11th, but I heard that that was going to be an actual pay-per-view. The UFC's gone away from their end-of-the-year pay-per-views to like more of a first or second week December pay-per-view. But if it's a pay-per-view, they deserve to be on there. I know the UFC thinks highly of Cody Garbrandt. He's actually a pretty popular fighter. But if it's a fight night, then that one can definitely headline a fight night.
Yeah, that one's got an action-packed fight, though. I like it.
Yeah, so those are pretty good. I mean, we already heard about Gaethje and Chandler, I think, the week before. And did you see their little run-in that they had on the set?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, no, nothing physical. Just, I'm going to punch you in the face. I can't wait to punch you in the face and things like that. So they're starting to build it up. It's going to be a great fight. And, again, it may happen in November. It may happen in December. I'll tell you real quick. Chandler had some concerns that he may not be vaccinated in time for November. But Dana White was asked about this in Houston. He says, we've talked to New York. We think we're going to be all right, because New York defines indoor activity as sports and entertainment, as well as dining and a Broadway show or a supermarket, whatever. And they were going to actually have a vaccine like mandate or something like that. And so Chandler was saying, look, I'm not anti-vax. I'm just waiting for FDA approval. But I think I mentioned this last week here on the show that I looked into it. It looks like FDA approval is close, at least on the Pfizer vaccine. So I think that fight will probably be okay in November. If it doesn't happen, it can happen in December a couple weeks later, because like I said, the UFC has a December pay-per-view scheduled as well. But Dana White sounded confident that we're going to get the fight one way or another. All right, man. So anyway, that was our UFC 265 recap. Like Go said, thank you very much for being with us for the watch-along this past Saturday. We're hoping to squeeze one more in before UFC 266, which is September 25th. And that fight card is got two title fights, Valentina Shevchenko against Lauren Murphy. We also have Alexander Volkanovski against Brian Ortega. I think they're headed to Phoenix for that one. And the return of Nick Diaz. Nick Diaz, he fights Robbie Lawler. But we're going to try and squeeze one more watch along. When we have the details and if it's official, we'll let you know. It'll be at the end of August. I don't want to jinx it, so we'll leave it at that for now. But, yeah, thank you very much for hanging out on Saturday night. And thank you, as always, for your support. You can follow me on social media. I'm at MMA Junkie George. Goes is at The Goes. The radio show is at MMA Junkie Radio. Follow us there on Twitter and Instagram. And check out our other work that we do on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. All right, folks, we'll see you all on Thursday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, for another edition of MMA Junkie Radio. Go out there and be a champion.